My name is Hari Sridhar. Today is the 24th of June 2023, and the time here in Vienna is 6 a.m. This is the fifth session of an interview with Prachi Mehta, and this interview forms part of a series I'm doing for the archives at NCPS, looking at the intersection of science with conservation policy and action in India. This interview is being conducted over Zoom, and Prachi is currently in Pune. Prachi, I want to focus in this session on your forest owlet work in a looking back, reflective kind of way, to look at how the research you've done has intersected with the conservation you've gotten involved in. And to start, I want to ask you about the conservation work itself. You know, when you started the forest owlet work, my sense is that it was really an interest in the ecology, natural history of the species that mainly motivated you. But later on, you also got directly involved in conservation work. What was the motivation to start conservation work related to the forest owlet?
Okay. So as you rightly said, when I started, can you hear me properly?
I can hear you, Prachi.
So when we started, it was merely out of research interest, curiosity of why this owl, species was not, why was it overlooked by so many people for such a long time in India? So we started looking out, doing surveys in its past locations. And then while doing that, we realized that the past locations which were mentioned by British officers, so they had given us a name of the area. Those days, GPS locations were not mentioned. But when Pamela Rasmussen got the specimens, she had mentioned, which area, and then she Googled and she took out the locations, those days, in 2000 or something. So with that information, when we started our work in 2005 or 2007, we found that the entire forest was gone, especially in Chhattisgarh, where now with East Madhya Pradesh, which is now in Chhattisgarh, the Fulgar area. So where it has been must have been forest is now taken over by agriculture. So that sort of started making sense that maybe this is what is happening at a landscape level. Now see, I was very fresh from my PhD. I was still looking out for the bird. I want to see the bird, the sighting of the bird, the photography, listening to the call. For me, the understanding about, its habitat loss and all gradually started coming. So initially, it was just the search, right? And then we didn't find and we started extending our work for over 5 states in India. And then we saw, how rapidly the forest is changing, right? Not even which is like historically, if you compare, but everywhere agriculture had really expanded and we could see encroachments. So this all understanding started seeping in, that this is what is called loss of habitat, fragmentation. When you actually see, of course, you've studied it all throughout, but when you see it firsthand, and especially when it's you and your project, I think understanding became much better for me, right? And then in Madhya Pradesh, when we came and we located two populations in reserve forests. These are not even protected areas, right? So these are two new populations which we saw, and the forests were being managed for timber loss. And that's when it alarmed us that, this kind of a... So now earlier it was forest into agriculture, and now this forest is wherever they are found. It's quickly being, logged under government permission. Felling, since I had already worked on felling systems and all, this was kind of, I understood this very well. Okay, they will be removing these trees of a particular girth and all, and this will be a cyclic rotation. And, so it sort of concerned us. And immediately we started to put a proposal for that, studying this population outside of the protected area to understand what are the ecological requirements. We didn't know how many birds were there. We just got few. When we did a quick survey, we just got a few positive signs, positive records. We saw the birds, and we didn't go into detail of how many birds were there, because these are all rapid surveys, you know, and we need to finish it in a particular time. We didn't even know what is the season that time, you know, when the birds are most vocal and most responsive. So we finished that, and we started this work. By the time we started the work, it was 2012. We finished this earlier survey in 2007-8. We had started in 5-6 and 7-8 we finished, and it took us 4 years to get the grant, permits and things to start the work. And this is when Hari, I started understanding it, how important a research component is for, even if you want to say, you know, for conservation. Because, you know, we can just talk about the owl and its mystique and its aura and its, you know, beautiful, its endemic and all. But what after that? What next? And when we started the work, we realized that the timber logging is that the department has to do what they have to do, because these are reserved for timber logging. These forests are also reserved for people, you know, the communities living there. So there's grazing going on, there's fires, there's a lot of fires, and there's a lot of illegal cricketing. It still continues. See, people require teak of the they're taking, these are all prime teak forests, okay, in of Central India. So they require teak for their household making. They still make houses of teak and implements, plowing implements. So their requirements are very real, right? And as the population grows, they will encroach into the agricultural land, also expands. The trees are being cut. So all this was happening. This then alarmed us, and then we saw, and then you see, we wanted to know, okay, where are these forests all at going in Madhya Pradesh, you know, where are they distributed? And this is the very first time we are starting, we're really taking baby steps, you know, in understanding. I told you, we've gone to US, we had learned, you know, how they were doing this work. So we wanted to do similar, get similar technologies of banding, color banding. So the can identify movement of them. So the research is a very integral part of, I think, any conservation action that you may propose, because you have informed decision then. You know, you can give much more reliable results to direct conservation actions. Right? So when we saw that the birds, which were the banded birds, after some time, when they sometimes, you know, we also found the banded birds moved to, say, 6 kilometers. So because it was banded, we could make out, right? And the movement also within that, the parental duties. And then we started to observe, we got some, see, those days camera traps are mainly used for tigers, you know? So bird studies, camera trapping was not very widely used in India, especially for owls, you know, we had to get, so we thought of how to get better camera traps. So all this research went into getting good results. Yes, and of course we needed funding for all this. So by the time I finished my study, you know, I got a hang of good camera traps, which I could use for my male guard work. But initially I used the camera traps which I was using for tiger work, you know, which we had already. There were a lot of issues, you know, these are big camera traps, you know, which had to be posted up on the tree, and to change the memory card, to change the cells every time you have. So those were different type of camera traps which you could manage from the ground, no? Because they were for the time. So we looked for different type of camera traps. So our research showed that, you know, the breeding success of the forest owl in this area is very low compared to, like, you know. So then by then I had not started my work on the other owls, but I used to watch. You know, I used to watch the other species of owls in the same landscape. Same similar size, like the spotted owl, the jungle owl. They're also cavity nesters. They're also similar size. They also have similar hunting techniques. Of course, their diurnality, the forest owl is diurnal, and these are nocturnal species. You know? Jungle is more of crepuscular. You know, so in my mind, I was observing this, and I said, "Okay, we have to understand the forest owl through studying the other owls, which it is sharing its landscape." So all this I was just building in my, and this 4 years in Madhya Pradesh, I really looked at its diet and building. We were watching, you know, we tried, we also used endoscope cameras to understand how many eggs are there. and then how many really came out. And then we saw that, you know, these owls are very vulnerable to predator attacks, like larger owls or other diurnal eagles, you know. So I have seen this in front of my eyes, you know. So we said, you know, every time I cannot be there, we have to get good camera tips to document this without being, you know, having to spend time observing, because it's not possible for one person to observe so many nests, you know. So the MP project was a stepping stone for us to really understand and develop what, how we need to study and how to direct conservation actions. Meanwhile, what immediately I took steps was that, you know, we have to protect the trees which we have found the owls nesting and, you know, roosting. So, see, everything has to go to the forest department. Now, in Madhya Pradesh, where I was working, I was very, very fortunate to have found a very supportive forest department. Right from top, you know, the PCCF level till the local, to the local forest officers. Because if your superiors, you know, for the PCCF, and they are supportive, you know, the direction trip percolates down, you know, from the DCFs and the RFOs, and they support you generally. I think Madhya Pradesh is a very research-oriented and research-friendly and conservation-oriented state. You know, the officers have good grounding, basic grounding in, you know, on understanding this, because a lot of research has already taken place in Kanha, Bandhavgarh, you know, and many of them have, they were my teachers in this WII. They also knew Jayant very well. So this helped us in getting our points across. So when I talked to the PCCF that I'm really pained to see that, you know, these trees are to be marked for felling. He immediately told me, okay, Prachi, what do you want? You tell us. So I said, sir, I want first to have a workshop with the officers. And I want to take them to field. I used to do at the local level many workshops. You know, I used to take the range officers and the guards there. So there's, you know what they told me? They said, and I showed them the owl. So this was at my level. Like, you know, I did not need permission or to talk to a senior officer. But I used to arrange it on my own. And they said, you know, when I showed them the forest owlet and the, you know, other owls and in their area, everything, you know, they said, this is the first time we feel we are like forest officers in the forest department and something we know about wildlife, because all till our, all this time that we've spent, we only know how to cut trees or measure trees and about, you know, forestry. But we've never been given any introduction or any interest in wildlife. You know, so that felt good. And those officers, then, you know, the range officers and the guards, they still, I mean, they're still around that area. We are still working in that area. And they remember that, yes, I remember, you know, you have been working in this area. So that also helped us to build connections.
Where was this specifically?
This is in Khandwa.
In Khandwa.
Yeah, Khandwa. Okay. Where we are still working.
Okay.
So after a gap of 2 years, again, I started another phase. And again, I'm going to start a third phase soon.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, long-term presence in the area also helps you to understand the trends, the patterns, the landscape, the people, and the same way the people also know you. You know, you have, they know you, they trust you. Later on, the trust building also comes, and that's what helped us to push our project ahead for the research and conservation. So coming to this. So when I talked to the CCF, he also, I mean, fortunately, I knew him from my days, you know, so it was easy for me to discuss with him. And I said, okay, sir, I would like to have a workshop here in the field. And he said, okay, you tell me when and all. And he, being a very senior officer, currently he's the director of IFM, Pankaj Srivastava. And he came with all some 4 to 5 senior officers of CCF level, okay, and put 150 forest guards, yeah, from 3 divisions. And I wasn't prepared for such a big workshop. I mean, it's just like when they agreed, I said, okay, fine, they'll come. But I think they took it very seriously, and there we discussed, you know, how one can save this species. This is endemic. And we gave all the presentations, our finding. My researcher, my team was with me. And it was very good to see, Hari, that, you know, the department, because their bosses were there, they were so supportive. Even the phase staff came up with very good suggestions. They came up with the ideas that how one can, do awareness, because that area is quite famous for capturing owls for trade. Not not the forest owl per se, because they didn't know about that, but they go for these big owls, owl and mottled. They look eerie and scary, so they use for sorcery and black magic and things like that for trade. So Kathni, and I don't know if these are hot spots of owl trade. Then they share their experiences that, this is really happening and we need to protect and we don't know. So we took all the staff also, not there, all 150 staff, to show the owls. I have some pictures. And then the happiness on their face, oh, this small bird we have to protect, kind of, and its habitat. And we showed them how one can locate the nest, how one knows, that the bird is there. So field demonstration, field experience for them becomes quite useful, when they have to get involved in even for the staff and the officers. The officers also came. So by the end of the evening, they really had a very fruitful discussion, and they said, okay, you give us the guidelines, you identify the trees. And I said, sir, can we put a green band on these trees? So you know that it does not have to be felled, it has to be exempted from felling. And because there's a green colored band, I think the community will also think there's something special, and we should not cut this tree. Then there was another, but then they will know which is the nest tree, because they will find out, this the green band tree must be having a nest. So it was a good thing for me, because I wanted this. I said, yeah, so then we should put some paint in about 50 meters, some more trees like that, so that they will not be able to find out which is a real nest tree or a roost tree. Because that would help in conserving, protecting more trees in that area. And also, it's true that the owls use multiple trees, for roosting, for caching their prey. Yeah, it's very important to know that not only the cavities used for nesting, but also they cache their prey. So in my videos, I have got it. The forest owl goes, it has mice in its hand. I mean, it's the talons, and it puts it in the cavity, looks around, and then it just flies away. When it comes back later, takes it up like a fridge, So it's cold. So these are the, see, I did not know this. I had no information about this. But only because of our research, we came to know, okay, oh, this is what is happening. So cavity is used for as a refuge, as a caching, for caching prey, for roosting, for nesting. And under the umbrella of forest owl, we can see many other, cavity nesting species. Spotted, jungle, barn, civets, many, this farm civet, small Indian civet, flying squirrel. So we decided this, and they agreed. They said, okay, we agree, and you give us locations. Give us GPS locations of the trees which you want to be marked, and we allow your team, you can go. We will just take one of the guards, one of the watchers of the forest department with you, and you show them. So that we started, and that was very successful, Hari, because for at least till we were there for this workshop happened in 15, 16, January 16. By the time I finished my work, it was 17 June. So 1.5 year, I that not a single tree was felled. Those marked trees. Even 17, and next year also, I went to see, till 18, I didn't see damaged these trees. And by then, we had finished our work, so we moved away from that area. And then again, I started my work in 21. So, and another outcome was that Betul is another area which there is, which where we found one more location of the forest, Khandwa district, adjoining to where I was working in Khandwa. So the officer who was doing his working plan, officer, he also knew me from our WII days, and he used to Nagar. So he was making a working plan. So working plan is like a, where the officer has to say, so many trees will be extracted from this particular compartment of this species, this girth, this size. So just based on our work, he just and declared an entire area as no felling zone. And he met with a lot of opposition, because that means loss of huge revenue for the forest. But he, I remember he telling me that
So,
he
sorry,
captured.
Prachi, can I just ask? So, he declared it a no-felling zone because you discovered that there were many forest owlets in that area?
Yes. We had
Okay.
got one forest owlet in that area, and I told him, and he said, "Very good that you've told me. I'm going to put this in my working plan." So see, fortunately, I got and some other officers who were also in my areas, like the senior officers, Mr. Sanjay Shukla. They are now heading CZA in Delhi. So these officers used to come to field. See, these are not protected areas. These are not some glamorous wildlife areas. Okay. But there is still a lot of wildlife in these forests. So when these officers used to come, they used to come and meet me. You know, I would call, they'll call on me, I'll meet them, I'll show them our work if I'm there. If I'm not there, my team would go and meet them. But they kept this, dialogue open. And so they also decided that, you know, somebody got an idea, okay, let's do forest owlet safari here. And I just told them, please don't do that. I told them that, you know, it's not the kind of a species that is, tourism friendly. In fact, none of the owls are. We should really not get. And they listen. The thing is that they listen. They said, okay, we agree, we will not do it. And
So, can you say a little more about why you think it's not tourism friendly?
see, the owls are basically very reclusive and shy species, you know. So that is why if they, especially forest owl, I'll tell you, and the other owls also. Like when we go also, we know if they need, I think for that matter, na, Hari, I think all species are. You know? And especially owls because they pick on live rodents or live animals. So they require the secrecy. Like when we used to also go to look at them, they, of course, they would be there. They are more used to people in the agriculture field. But if, you know, people like us would just look at them with our binoculars or cameras, for some time they would tolerate our presence. And I think after some time they will move away. So I think it's best to be left alone. I mean, if you promote tourism where people will go after them with these big cameras and all, I feel that they are going to be disturbed because what we saw, that is why I put camera traps on. That's what I was saying. And I didn't want to be intrusive while watching them because the owl would sit with the prey in its talon. It can see you from miles, you know, that somebody's sitting there watching me because of the, and they also sit on top. So they have a very good vantage point. They will not go to feed their young till they see that somebody's watching them. They will not reveal the location. And for 3 to 4 hours, they will just, and the young ones would be, you know, giving begging calls, but the parent will not go. And the minute we leave, immediately it will go and feed the young. So when I saw this, no, I realized that the owls do not need this kind of attention. And it's better to keep them out of public eye. Because, see, also, Hari, in India, no, there is no discipline about tourism. I've seen this. I feel unless we can really implement some strict guidelines about the tourism and tourists, I think it is harming the wildlife in India. But I don't want to discuss this as my main issue because it can hurt other people who are advocating too. But so, and they also asked me, sorry, I'm jumping from
No,
point to
no.
point. Yeah, but at that point, I was telling you Sanjay Shukla sir was there, and he also put it in his management plan of the entire Kanwa district. Okay, wherever the forest owlet is found, those areas need to be exempted from selling, and we should get the locations from the research team, and those trees should not be disturbed, things like that. You know, so that was a very good initiative by the forest department, I would say, and I really congratulate you. You know, they listen. This is where your research gets into practice, you know, and implementation. Also, there is this road which has come. This is a state highway which is passing through that area. Is SH-46. All right, and there I saw all of owl mortalities. Apart from owl, jungle cat, and many others. So I started just monitoring that on my own to understand why. You know what is happening. I've just written up the paper. It's come in JOTT. just 2 months back. And I wanted to focus because there are many owls which we are finding. Two forest owls we found in. So it's so it's an endangered species. So I had to make a case like that, you know, because you know it's an endangered species, some more focus would come. But then many other owls also, like barn, spotted, jungle, many night jars.
You
So
found
that
roadkills of these?
roadkills. I wrote up a letter to the land department, and of course I shared all this with the PCCF, and he said, okay, let's talk to the forest road authorities. But that time it nothing happened. Of course, I sent a letter and all. And again, when I restarted my work in 21, again I continued this, and now I published it in the paper. So I think when it's up, now I'm thinking of taking it up again with the because the road is going to be widened under National Highway, or they're going to be 4 lanes. So I discussed this with PCCF, and they said, Kia, let's take it up. So I have to take this up with the concerned authorities. I don't know what will come out of it, but at least it's documented, you know, that this is what is happening. And we've located the hot spots where these accidents happen. Especially, and since it's an endangered species, you know, we can get some little more attention from the authorities. I'm hoping, you know. So yeah, so that is also one action of our research, which I would say has helped in getting some focus on owls. Because till now they were saying, you know, we just talk about owls, like, you know, who talks about owls for research? I mean, I many times I when I went to the ministry and I was talking to some officers, they said, like, you know, madam, we are talking about owls here. We are dealing with large mammals. आप कुछ टाइगर या कुछ वजनदार चीज बताओ, हाथी. So, you know, like I said, this is also a very important species, and it's only, I mean, I had to start from that, you know. So being in the ministry also, okay, once they hear you and they sort of trust you, then I think things can go well. Because I got color banding permit for 60 birds, which is very unusual, you know. But maybe it's because in the reserve forest, and it was a schedule, it is a Schedule One species. But I got the permit. So I think, yeah, I was lucky, I would just say. But now things have changed a lot. I think a lot of people are facing issues in getting permits.
So how, Prachi, these, you know, you've done color banding, you've done, you know, you've set up cameras, you're also now, you know, doing like radio collaring or radio tagging. How have these aspects of research, do you know, what kind of impacts have they had in terms of the conservation?
Yeah, so as I said, see, color banding helps us to talk about population. At least we know how many birds are there. Banded, I can tell you specifically that, yes, I banded 49 birds. So I know 49 individuals are there, because there is no information about the population of the species as of now. So I'm just talking specifically of the forest owl, okay? So color banding really even helped us, you know, and also to understand these birds do move. Extent, not like if they go beyond our study area, then only telemetry can be useful. So that's when I decided that we need to tag these birds, you know, because color banding can give you a local information as much as long as we are going to go and see, you know. If we happen to be in the and we see the banded bird, then yes, we know. But if the bird, owl is further away, then till I receive a signal, I'm not going to be able going to go and hunt for it, right? I won't know where it is. I would just know number of birds, its local movement, parental notice. So that's when I came to know the male, female both prepared the nest, because we had color banded both male and female. Yeah, then the male also two times the females, like double timing, you know. It had two nests, one male, you know. So it had one nest here and one nest a little further away. So see, these are all insights into the ecology of the species, you know, the behavior of the species. So that's when you know that, you know, it can have two broods. One does succeed, then it will have another one. Also, in the roadkill, you know, Hari, one of my banded owl died. Okay, so that was a provisioning male. It had a nest which was it was providing food to the female and the young one. So when I saw the roadkill, and when we the banded bird, we went and checked on its nest, and the female kept calling for, like, whole day waiting for the mail to come.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, next day, and it had one juvenile inside, at least one, a chick inside the nest. So he was providing food for both. And after a day, we didn't see the female, we didn't see the papa. I don't know what happened. Maybe they were predated, maybe they died. He couldn't have the female, if she left the nest, then definitely the juvenile died because it was not, I mean, it wouldn't have to go right. So because, see, that can have a lot of implications also. And because it was banded, I knew the history from which area it was, where it was nesting, right? So then that's when I asked for telemetry. Did I tell you that I just put a query on one of these raptor
Yes.
groups? I told you, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Peregrine Fund donated us material. They were very simple tags those days. I mean, I'm talking about 15, 16. They were just like, they would beep and we just have to go and take the GPS on going there. Like, not like the current one which I'm using. So we did that and we had a good researcher, that time Akshay Anand. He was very good. Yeah. So I would give credit, we have been a good team, a good researcher. Now he's gone to Florida to do his PhD. He also did his master's thesis with us after finishing it. So he was a very sincere, good person to work with. And he put in his commitment, and because of which we got very good data. Because it is not easy to, just look at the owl, you can hear the beep, and you have to go verify it, like, triangulation and all, verify where the bird is and take GPS. So it's quite taxing work. And three birds, three individuals we could capture and put a data tag. So that was the first time I was putting a tag. I didn't know how to do it. I sort of learned online from my scientist friends in the US. They showed me sketches. They showed me how to do the harness, things like that. Because in India, nobody had done owl work, I could not really go and ask anyone. And my friends from USA, they really helped me out with this. And of course, Jay, always my technical support. So we did that work and it was good. And I got confidence that, this telemetry is what we can get. So with telemetry, Hari, we could get areas where it was feeding, foraging areas, where how far it was going, what is the home range. So we got this answers, but just okay for three birds, but nevertheless, we started with inquiry, and
And how was that useful going forward? The information on home ranges.
very, very useful. So because we came to know that, the forest requires both kind of areas, forested areas for nesting and agricultural open areas for feeding. Because we didn't know where it was feeding all the time. It was, where is it going? What are their activity times? So we've got, it's an absolute purest diurnal owl, So 6 o'clock in the morning till 6 in the night. So then it has this resting phases, when it will feed, what is the activity, maximum activity time, what time it will go hunt. So all this information we got, but it was with a lot of pain because we had to physically be there, 24, I mean, six, at least 12 hours to track its movement. But yeah, it gave me an understanding that now we need to have better tags, or GPS tags. So home range, of course, is a very useful information. And how much of an area a male would require. So I have tagged one female and two males. Also, one of them we recaptured after my work was going to get over. We retrieved the tag. The other two birds at the end of their list, they were predated by the eagle owl. So with that information you get, because the tag was beeping, we came to know, and it had fallen and the feathers were there, So it was predated by another note. So that information is also very important, to understand what is really happening. Natural prediction, but that's fine. But that's also an important part of ecology, life history.
So you're saying that the tagging also helped you understand that they require both forests and agricultural lands.
Correct.
Was this something? So earlier you were saying also how you were seeing forests being lost, and therefore, you're worried about the fate of the forest owlet because forests were being lost so
Correct.
rapidly.
Yes.
But given this understanding, does it mean that that the owlet actually requires a mix of habitats for to do well, both forests and agriculture.
Yes, in fact, all owls require that. Yeah, because they all of them feed on rodents and small birds, or say reptiles and snakes and invertebrates. For rodents and invertebrates, they will always sit in open areas. So it can be agriculture field, fences. Many times you see barn owls sitting on the stumps, so they will spot it all. The forest owlet will sit not in open areas. It will sit on the trees. So just the edge areas, where it will actually sit. It will not go and sit out in the open like the spotted owl does or the barn owl does. Yeah, it will sit mostly 90% I have seen. It will be sitting on the tree, on the edge of the forest and the agriculture. So it's a like edge ecotone habitat, as you can say. It will hunt in those areas. It also hunts in the forest, I guess. But during the breeding season, the rodents and all it will feed pick up from the grasslands or farmlands. Now, I understood your question that my concern about expanding agriculture. So when I'm talking that these are some of the main hunting grounds of the forest owlet, then why should I worry about it? But when it cannot live, these are not grassland species, right? It requires forest, it requires trees for roosting, resting, nesting, and caching its prey. So forest and a mix of forest and agriculture land is what it requires. And if the agriculture land is eating away into the forest, again, that will be a crucial loss of habitat for them. Because see, they are very sight fiddle, most owls are. You will find them mostly there around in that area, So they have chosen a particular tree, a particular hollow for a particular reason. And if that comes into the way of agriculture and it gets cut, then again, you have habitat loss at a micro level. We are not talking about like huge trees being felled or even one tree matters for very sight fiddle species like owls.
So that's I want to ask you more generally about working with the forest department. And from our conversation so far, it seems like you've done a lot of your work in close collaboration with the forest department. And my sense is also that overall it has been positive that your interaction with the forest department in relation to the forest owlet work has mostly been positive. Based on your experiences, I wanted to know, what you felt was what is important when working with the forest department to get the forest department to pay more attention to findings from research in the management that they do, in the conservation that they do. So I'm guessing that part of it is, really dependent on who the individual is and how interested that individual is in
Correct.
conservation. And I'd like to know what you think about that. But also from the side of the researcher or the scientist, what are the things that they can do to make this more likely to happen? That conservation management in these areas incorporates the research that's relevant for management.
I lost you, Hari.
So I was asking, so one part of this, can you hear me now, Prachi?
Yeah, I can hear you. I lost you in between. After you said, what can you do to make sure that they get engaged, no?
Yeah, so what can researchers do to increase the likelihood that their research is used in management?
So let me start with telling you, Hari, that I have I'll just talk about the forest owlet. A bittersweet experience with working with the forest department. So where I have had very good experience working with Madhya Pradesh Forest Department, which that's where I'm now extending my project for the third time, third phase, where we are going to propose a forest owlet conservation reserve, in this area. So these ideas, when I gave them, they said, okay, yes, this can be done. And so we share our work with them very actively, irrespective of the state. But yes, it is the individual on the other side. You know, how receptive and responsible and interested he is, that makes a lot of difference. So fortunately, in Madhya Pradesh, I have seen this, that they are the officers are generally well-trained, you know, in wildlife management. And then recently, I had gone to Kanha for this conference. And I was mentally comparing in Maharashtra, the state, Madhya Pradesh, and some other states where we are working. And I feel, yes, Madhya Pradesh does have an edge over other states because there is a legacy of good wildlife management, wildlife training, and the officers continue to receive this kind of inputs from their superiors. And there is a lot of support for research. So that is not lucky. Maharashtra, being a home state, we knew everyone. We were lucky till a certain extent in the sense, see, lucky is not the correct word, I think, because that underplays your merit and your credit of your credibility of your work. What I'm trying to say is that we got good officers to work with who were very pro-research. Of course, they had their own ideas, you know, but see, they listen and they said, okay, why not? So when I was asking for telemetry permit, you know, in Maharashtra, Hari, I got permit to tag 46 individuals of owls. Now, this is completely unheard of. I mean, these are different species. Now, by then, I came to Maharashtra. I had decided to work on other species as well to understand that why forest owl it is endemic, why when there is an assemblage of so many species of owls, eight, nine species living together, which are widely distributed, using the same resources, same landscape. Why then? What makes the forest owl so restrictive in its range, isolated in its population? So I said then to answer that, I need to also study other owls to compare their home ranges, their feeding, their movement patterns. So I asked for this permit, telemetry permit, and Maharashtra, they were very completely taken aback because it's more of tiger work, you know. So owl kaha se aaya, like, you know, that also Melghat Tiger Reserve and. And they were like generally very confused, you know, and they were like, and there was research advisory committee which each state has, and you know, people from BNHS now that competes, you know, competing organizations. So no. And one officer, you know, got up from and he said, why aren't you giving her the permit? He's saying, when we are giving permits to do work on collaring of tigers and collaring of elephants. So no, but it's an endangered species. Somebody said, yeah, so is the tiger and so is the elephant. Just because she's talking something different and she has a credibility, why aren't you giving her the permit? You should give. And I was like, whoa, this officer. And then I think, you know, the wind direction changed and they sort of considered, okay, fine, we will give it to you. And then, of course, I said, look up, Rachi, if any saying something happens, you'll go behind the bars and all. I said, yeah, I mean, that doesn't. Whatever, good faith and, you know, good fun. But they were also really amused that, you know, I'm asking for permit for so many birds. Of course, I didn't have funding, nothing. I said, yes, first let's give me the permit, then I'll ask for the funding, you know, from and luckily, I mean, I got it in 2 years' time. It took me some time, but yeah, by then I was preparing my field work, you know, the groundwork in Melbourne. Where I located the nest, where I did the occupancy. So I know which owls to radio tag, you know, which is the. And these tags were different tags, Hari. These were GPS tags, which would give me GPS. I don't have to locate the birds. I mean, I have to just go a little within 1 kilometer, it will just download the data by itself in my receiver. So it was not like my MP experience. So this was slightly better in terms of hard work and, you know, hardship, I would say. And my team. Kamral Hussain is working there, excellent guy. And I really give credit to these guys, you know, without that we wouldn't, because it's a very chaotic, very tension-filled work, you know. But so till this officer, Mr. Reddy, you know, MS Reddy, was the field director, then he became the field director in Melghat, and he supported me more than one ways, you know, like he knew that he only told me, remember last time I told you that there are people complaining, Prachi, and he said, I can smell that this. Jalne ka badbu aa. Remember, I told you last time. So he knew that there's going to be opposition from the local groups. And he had just said, you do your work, just don't engage with these people. The minute he went out, and they put him also into trouble, this the same group, he was in the jail for one. It was another reason. One lady committed suicide there, so they falsely implicated him and the DFO. But that has nothing to do with that officer. Anyway, so that officer also, and after that, so by then the atmosphere had become quite vicious in Melghat. That after we did all this, we complained on them, we told them this thing. Even then, they are still continuing the work. So now the currently the officers who are there, they're new. They don't know much. They don't know much about us. Though we engage with them, we tell them that they are very wary. That is the reason I'm now winding up from it. So you see the same work which was continuing because there was good officers, there was good atmosphere, which received a setback. Actually, I should say my work didn't receive a setback. I continue to work the way I was always. But the kind of atmosphere changed, that is not making me feel good. I just feel that this is not a place for a researcher or scientist to work. When any small thing happens, where people come rushing, okay, could we have to put a police complaint? And I said, what for? I have to be there with my researcher. Every time something happens, I just go, come, just leave. I said, now you tell me, I will answer your questions. Because these are youngsters, they really don't know. Since, ma'am, we don't know what are they going to do. I said, nothing. You are not going to do anything. I am there. I said, you take my statement. You take my whatever you want to do, panchnama, and then they start. So see, the thing is, Hari, coming to this, that scientists and researchers, sorry, scientists, researchers, and forest department, they have to have a trust building between them. They can't get influenced by some people. So in Maharashtra, especially in Melghat and Nagpur side, there are certain individuals with a lot of political motivation. So the department, what are the officers there for? You take a stand. You need to know that what is science, what is research, and it's happening in your area with your permit, under your guidance, with your staff. Why would you even listen to other people? So that is why I feel that the department has to really not bend down due to any local pressures or political pressures. So unfortunately, we didn't have any political issues, but local pressures there are quite vicious. So I feel that in case the forest and science has to go ahead into conservation, the department also has to stand in support of good work, which they have done so far with us. I'm not complaining, but I realize, that they are not able to talk because they always tell me, madam, I under humko pata hai, we understand. So humko upar se bula, humko upar se order aaya hai. You understand Hindi, right?
I do, yeah.
So we have been told from our bosses have been told by this XXX fellow. So this should not happen to any scientist or any researcher, because that really. See how it's so much effort we are working, not only me. I know many cases where this is happening. So they say, no, I would say the forest world is a tiger of the conservation. In tiger also similar politics. But it is happening at much bigger level. Here I am the only person who's working continuously on this species. That's why I'm getting the backlash. Right. So to avoid all this, the department and the scientists have to have a very transparent one-to-one interaction. And the decisions have to see the department. Some local officers cannot just tell you, no, you can't do this. If you have got permit, then that work has to go according to the permit. It has to be institutionalized. Any research or any conservation practice which you are saying, it should not differ with people to people. This is what happened. Till Reddy was there, I got very good support. After he went, though there are all women now, officers, and they were saying, somebody was saying, oh, now it's good for you. And I also was hoping, but it really didn't happen because individuals differ in taking their decisions, so that's what I
So,
feel.
does the way in which, so one is what you've been saying is that, building trust is important, and the personal equation between the researcher and the person in charge in the forest department is important. In your own experience, has it mattered? How much has it mattered how you communicate what you have found and what you choose to highlight from your research? You
Oh,
know.
very much, very much. It definitely because see, the department has actually there are many officers who actually are interested in listening to your outcomes, the research, discuss the right platform, the right time, and you go. So that really matters a lot. And we have been very regular in updating them. So I have this habit of if some officer is like really interested, and I share photos on WhatsApp also, like, this is the owl chick which is coming out, or this is, so they also get an insight of what is happening, kind of in their area, even when they are not there or they're not visiting. So keeping in touch, sharing your work regularly is very important. Then they understand that, yes, these people are actually doing some good work, and then they also consult you at times. Like, for one, I just wanted to tell you, this Madhya Pradesh Forest officer, PCCF, called me once. He said, Prachi, you said ki the breeding success is low. So let's have an ex situ forest audit, breeding center. So I said, sir, why? He said, see, we are doing this for Lesser Florican, we are doing it this in GIB. See, BNHS, they are doing this, and they have come up with a proposal, and it's a huge funding we'll try to get. I said, sir, you really don't need to do this thing, in a breeding center, in an enclosure. These are not the kind of birds which will breed. What you really need is to protect the habitat in nature. So he heard me out, and we talked over the phone. I said, sir, this is like just to spend money in crow. And I think for GIB, I understand, for Florican, I understand, because they are really living in that area which are grasslands, and which are used by many communities for many pastoralists and for farming. Here your forests are control, so you can protect it. I said, we can have modified guidelines for felling, and we can do some work with communities for incentives for protecting the trees. I said, sir, at this stage, please don't go for this kind of. So then he heard me and the PCCF, and he said, okay, fine, then I'll tell the BNHS people that no, we have not entertained this kind of proposal. So I think that, see, once they know your credibility or they believe you, then maybe it's easy to implement some conservation plans. So now this is the third thing in Madhya Pradesh where I'm going to start my third phase, where we are going to forest conservation reserve. So these areas, as I said, now these are outside the protected areas. You can't sanctuary or a national park. So what next we'll do? So we thought of forest and conservation reserve. So people are there, and that's where try to reduce the dependency. So we have a certain plan, and the second phase is over. Now the third phase I'll start for implementation, hopefully, once I get some funds. So continuation of work also is very important, So in where I told you I'd gone to US, those people who are working on same species, Hari, for 40 years, because they said, yes, that is how we develop understanding. So your long-term presence and understanding is very important. So the department, forest department tenures, they change in 3 years, but at least if you are there, like,
search of so many different kinds, right? Monitoring, first estimating populations, then monitoring populations, studied nesting, roosting. You've done color banding and radio tagging. Of this whole bouquet of different kinds of research that you've done, if you have to look back, which of these pieces of knowledge that you have built, do you think has been most important in or has had the strongest influence on decisions related to conservation that have been taken for this species?
I would say monitoring the population, because we have occupancy data, just generally presence absence data on surfaces. That forms the basis of, the species was here in my tenure when I was working. After this 3, 4 years or 5 years, it continues to be there, which is good. And in certain grids, yes, they were there, and then it disappeared. And what is the reason? If we can relate, and when we could show that, let's see, the trees have gone from here. There's, a lot of illegal tree cutting, a road where the trees are. So we could actually show this in our book, and in a few cases, yes. I'm talking especially about outside the protected area. Okay. Protected area also, our occupancy or our continued monitoring helped me a lot. Because in Melgaard, there was some scale of tree felling. And when Mr. Reddy was there, I told him this, and he took it very seriously. And he actually got the village relocated. He took a very fast action, which was pending for years together. So I'm saying that these continued monitoring helps, I would say. Of course, other aspects like diet and all, looking at pellets. And I've made a manual also to identify prey from the owl pellets.
Who's
So,
that the manual targeted at? Who?
for researchers, mainly researchers, forest officers, scientists, because it's written in English, and but we understand that it has got limited uptake from common man. But to offset that, we actually conduct workshop for the farmers and forest officers, staff. We show them, and when they open the pellet, they see the bones of rodents or snake skins or invertebrates, and we show them everything. And every year I do this, okay, in both my sites. And when the villagers also saw them, then they realized, oh, how important owl is. And then that's when we tell them, look, now let's put owl perch in your farm. Just one stick for the owl to sit, and you don't have to use your pesticides and rodenticides. So that's how we come to putting it to field implementation. And this manual, of course, goes for academics.
And have do forest owlets use these perches?
Forest owlets don't, because they're not nocturnal, but barn owls do. Okay, so spotted owlets do. They sit on the nerve. So to prove that, we have again put a camera trap on the opposite perch, because how will you prove that the owl had come? So we had put that, and we got some shots. We also are working on nest boxes. So that how to, because in outside India, most people, see, they also have all very pruned forests, that you must be managed forests. So very natural forests are much less there. So they use nest boxes very widely. So from the beginning, some of my collaborators or my scientists were telling me, why don't you start nest boxes in India? So I said, yeah, first I want to understand what is the requirement of the nest, the kind of cavity it uses. So we did that, few nest boxes we made. Forest owlet has not used it, but other owls have used. Okay, and magpie robin very happily is using it. So we have to understand the pros and cons of such things also. So I'm studying. I'll take some time to understand, and then maybe next time we'll make. Especially in Madhya Pradesh, we should probably see if it's
So
enough.
do you feel that the availability of cavities for nesting might be a limiting factor for this species?
Yes, you very rightly said that. That is the main thing, yes. Main issue with the forest owlet. We feel that is a cavity, availability of cavity-bearing nests, trees. Because where it is, that's why the Madhya Pradesh population is declining. And we have to make available, that's why we have to retain the cavity-bearing trees, the ones which are already there, which they are using. I have to revive the painting of the. So we have again started that in this year. In phase, we have again painted the trees and all. And third phase, again, we will focus on this cavity.
So, in addition to working with the forest department, you also work with villagers around the areas where you work. Talk a little bit about that. What's the nature of that work, and what was the motivation to start that work?
Yeah, so when we saw that there are a lot of nests, the forest owlet nests also were near the, on the edge of the farm and the, I told you, in the forest, ecozone areas. And wherever we found the whose farm it was in, so we would tell the farmer's family that, so please don't cut this tree, where this bird comes. So they said, yeah, it comes and cries whole night or whatever, they will say. So they understand, but it should not come in their way. If it doesn't come in their way, then they are okay. But if they want to cut that, they want that tree, then it can get chopped off. So I time a few times I told them that how much money do you get? And they said, oh, we can get like one for one full year. So we take tree, if we sell it, then we can get good amount of money. Now I cannot provide them that kind of money. So I started with them kind of a livelihood initiative. And when I talked women, so earlier that they said, no, we don't know any stitching. But I observed in Karnataka, actually, I started this work. I was working on elephants, that most women had a machine, that's a stitching machine in their house. So I said, I myself don't know anything stitching, but I learned some things from YouTube. And I said, we should make elephant shaped keychains for us. I went with the pencil, and I myself was very nervous because I didn't know, but then they saw me struggling with thread and needle. I was trying to explain. They said, okay, now didi humko do, we'll show it to you. And then from then onwards, they are making such beautiful appliques, Hari, and putting up these, elephant theme handicrafts they make, and we market it at our end. So they get money, and then they with that, they participate in our programs. There's a trust building with them. So then this same idea I took to my owl friends, Said like elephant was quite successful. So I said, now let's talk to them about owl, that owls are important. And we used to have film shows for in the villages. And we used to have drawing, sketching competition. So whenever I would go, at least one, three, three to four, once in 3 to 4 months, we would have, and we still have, our team also does it. And we do some quiz competition, drawing competition, skits and all, show the movies, Guardians of the Galaxy, those owl ka films and all, whatever we could download. So such as some interest generation, we put up a lot of posters in the village, in Hindi, big, big posters about how to control, when protect owls and control forest fires, things like that, in which they can understand. So there also I started this owl theme handicraft work, and that's also going very well. They make very beautiful, applique. And some of them also, guys, they also learned painting. So they made owl t-shirts and all. So all this happened, and we continued giving them work during COVID. Okay, so because everybody was in the village that time, no? So we went there and we should teach them, and that went very well. But as soon as COVID, that wave stopped, and of course our team also got COVID that time in Melgaon. But then these people, they went out of the village, they've gone looking for jobs. So with them has gone the craft also, which they have been trained in. So, and we had also bamboo workshop with Jayant had started in Melgaon. We bought machines for them, and they made beautiful bamboo shaped things, owls and bamboo shaped tiger pug masks, and they would paint. So it was a very successful program from between 18 to 21. After that, we could not continue that. So, but we are continuing it. Like Madhya Pradesh also, we have started restarted the work from our team, and so this is how we are involving, local. But it is not easy, I would say, because see, marketing is not our forte. We have to continuously, but it is like we've just put up a shop, whoever wants takes this order, and we participate in the exhibitions and all, and people like their things because these are real handicraft, by tribal people. Designers are tribal, they are fancy, like for youngsters and for tops and t-shirts and all. So yeah, that's how I have it.
Rachi, for you personally, how challenging has it been to get involved in the other aspects that are required for conservation? From earlier conversations, it's clear that you were really drawn towards research and studying species in the wild, observing in the wild. But, in this conversation, you've spoken about having to engage with farmers, having to engage with villagers, get involved in this kind of work, you know, building livelihoods, also interactions with the forest department. So all of these other skills and other forms of engagement that are required for conservation work, is this something that you take to naturally, or has it been a challenge? And you know, where you, even though you feel uncomfortable doing it, you do it because it's important for the work that you do.
Let's just let me tell you, the power is gone here in my house.
Okay.
I was just UPS is beeping, but I don't know how long this will last.
Okay, we can go on till it lasts. Hopefully, we'll be done before that.
So the coming to your question, I found it very easy to relate to people and talk to them. And I think it's very important, Harry. You know, the research can't just stay in the PPTs and the thesis and the report, and it has to go to the people. And it has to come from people also, you know. So I found it a very natural transition, you know, from getting outside your laptops and just get to the people, take it to the people, and you know, training the people. So I very often conduct workshops, you know, even for the field staff or for like, you know, students or villagers also. I told you, know, villagers also, I show them how this small thing, we show them camera trap, you know, footage and all, and I see that excitement and happiness on their face. And I love engaging with kids. Like, that's just from my earlier days, and I love talking to kids. So I really didn't find it difficult that way. And I think this is one way of engaging. I mean, your conservation has to involve stakeholders, especially the local stakeholders, wherever you're.
And I also wanted to ask you, you know, about working with Jayant Kulkarni, your husband, who's a former IFS officer. You know, at different points in this conversation, you've mentioned him and spoken about how you've worked, you know, you work often in a complementary sort of way. I want to also ask you about, you know, the fact that he was in the IFS. How has that both influenced the way you approach research and conservation as a team, and also in terms of how it has influenced your relationship with the Forest Department, the opportunities you have to collaborate with the Forest Department?
So as I told you, only we're working with Jayant, I realized that, you know, conservation is so important. I was like only just looking at birds, and I was just fascinated. I was very naive, I would say. And when I started talking to him, he brought a completely different perspective in my life and my thinking. You know, he would always talk about, look at this, hills are going, and I would be looking out for a hornbill or something, and he would just look, you know, see, look at this, you know, this forest was like this. So he started this conversation with me right from when we got married. Slowly, I started understanding what he means when I, as I told you, know, we were doing this enviro search consultancy and all. And I would just tag along with him, with my kid with me, a very small Antara. But he would come back and tell me, you know, that they're just completely destroying the forest. They're doing all monoculture, useless plantations, you know, whatever, you know, he had observed those days. And I would listen to him, and I used to, it was not very interesting for me those days, you know. And I was quite distracted and all. But then later, and I started reading his reports and what he had to say. And then when I started my work, going to field and observing it myself, and I realized what he made so what he said made so much sense, you know. And then, of course, you know, when you're staying with somebody, your thinking gets influenced, you know, so much. Because I always look up to him. Because I know, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have married a forest officer who actually thinks, who thinks. That's what I want to say. So I think it has helped me a lot in my life, definitely. And I would give the entire credit to him. Because it's my formative years in WA and all, I was oriented or I was more directed towards becoming a researcher. But conservation inputs did not come during, because it's an institute for the research, right? So inputs for research came for me through Jim. Yeah, and regarding your and all his work, you know, whatever he has told earlier, whatever he used to say, it makes so much sense now when I see how, you know, monocultures are destroying our forest and, you know, getting. So when those days he used to speak, I used to say, why, from where is he discussing this? But I realized that he has his innate understanding, you know. And how it has helped us working in the forest office department, yes, it has. See, most people know him. You know, who would leave a very coveted post of IFS officer, you know? I mean, of IFS, what am I talking here? IFS, yeah. So they still ask me. I said I was never instrumental. I never met him when he left. I would have told him not to leave. But when I see, you know, I understand why he left. Because he's a very different kind of a person, you know? And not one can manage these things, you know. There are what I see. So nowadays, you have many smart officers, you know, or who have good understanding and have passion to do things. But there is another side also, you know, and which he was very afraid of, that he will become like that. He didn't want to do that. Or whatever. I mean, that I think he can answer better. From what I know, I'm happy that he came out, because he wouldn't have been able to be a part of this because his temperament is very different. Yeah. So his understanding and temperament could not have found a way in, like, if he was a, he would have stayed in the Forest Service. If I would have stayed in the Forest Service, if I had, I would have found my way. In fact, I should tell you that I appeared for the IFS exam and I just lost by 1 mark.
Okay, when
Okay.
was this?
This was like 97, 97. I 96. I just gave it a shot, you know. I didn't know. I was in Melghat and I just went and gave the exam. I'm not even prepared. I got a letter from UPSC that provisional candidate. That just if somebody had not taken, then I was next. But then after that, I didn't attempt. So see, you need require different. I'm not saying all officers are bad or corrupt. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you need a particular temperament, you know. You also need very honest officers in the service. And Jayant, you know, extremely, extremely honest. But maybe, yeah, but he feels that he wouldn't have been able to pull through the kind of system which is there. So, yeah, so it has helped. And then today, when we go and meet the officers, everybody knows. So, we get a lot of respect. He gets a lot of respect from the officers. But permissions are not because of you being an officer, it's completely based on merit and what your proposal says, you know. So,
Last time we spoke, I think maybe it was in the context of the elephant work that you mentioned that it's been a challenge to publish some of this work. I was also wondering about the forest owlet work. You know, what has been the experience? Has it been challenging to publish in this work as well? And if so, why that might be? And also, what is your general approach to scientific publications? How important do you think it is in the work that you do?
Oh, it's very important. I think one has to do, and while I say that, I have been, so the challenges in terms of publication, let me ask, say, the forest owlet, we have published some of it, and some three or four, I mean, more manuscripts are already in the pipeline, and I think it's very important. The challenge for me is that it's only me who has to sit and write, because the researchers who are there, they're still not very experienced in writing. So none of them can write. And I don't want this to be put out in the, because I don't want to, you know. But I wish more researchers who are trained, you know, because some of them make excellent field workers, you know, field work, they do good work in the field. But when it comes to writing or analysis, you know, it just comes solely on me. So I'm making this, like, we have hired some more people in Pune office, and, you know, helping me, because there's a lot of data set which has to be. So it's in the process, and I think research has to be published. So similar thing for my elephant project also. We've got very good data, and which we are now going to publish in 3 4 years. I mean, 3 4 years data which we want to publish now. Yeah, so yes, research outputs have to be there, putting out in the conferences. So some 7, 8, 9 students have done their MSc with me, our project, and 2, 3 have worked on the elephant project. So they do their MSc, but after that, very few have published. We've published at least 3 to 4 MSc they've got published as papers. Yeah. So yeah. So I may be lacking in that direction, but yeah, it just takes time for me to do all the work. But
Can you
it's in
say?
the pipeline, so I'm very confident it will next year it we will be out with some 2, 3 publications on the out.
Can you say a little more about why you think it's important to be published? I'm also interested in this in relation to the conservation work. Does it affect the conservation work as well, if the work is published or not?
It does. Because then even the forest officers take, okay, this is already published. Now they also understand the importance of publications, right? So when you have a publication and it's peer reviewed, yes, then they take it, okay, fine, yeah, we've read the paper, we understand what are the recommendations, okay, we'll do it. Many officers will do that. And generally to take it in the conferences, I think it's a good idea to validate your science within the science community. To say that this is the science which we have done, and I think this way is a way forward if you want to really get into an action based on your research. So the research needs publication, definitely. It has to go that way. And conservation, it will, as I said, the policy makers also look at that. When you have more confidence based on your research, when I speak that, see, my research showed and so many, the breeding success was low for 11% of the forest, whatever, 11% only get got juveniles, or 37% of spotted owlet got. So you understand. There I can give numbers based on my publication, which is published. I mean, which is paper which is published. So it's not just that I'm just talking from my experience or from what I feel. So when there's a scientific base, it always stands tall, what you have to say.
Do you think it also affects your ability to raise funds? In your own experience, has it been
Yes.
important?
Yes, definitely. It definitely helps in your raising funds and raising your profile as a scientist. So, yes, definitely.
How much, talking about funding, how much has funding been a constraint in the sense that, how much influence has where from where you've raised funds and for what you've been able to raise funds influenced the direction in which your work has gone?
Your fundraising is always very challenging, Mary. So especially when we are an NGO, we have to also raise our own salary. Like suppose if I work with MOEF or DST, they don't pay for my salary. They just pay for the project expenses and the researchers' salary. Because mostly they just give it to the institutes, right? Where the institute professor or the scientist is already paid. I mean, has a salary. But I have accepted these kind of projects because we did not have another source. And I have worked with myself for quite a many projects, especially on my own project, But we managed it. It is a challenge, and it did not affect our work output, I would say. Because nevertheless, I went there because it's some my own interest pushed me there, So.
So would you say that you have been able to raise the money for the kind of work you wanted to do?
Yes. Yes. So technically, yes, I got the funds for. Then I tried to get matching funds, like from the DST, where I got, like whatever you propose, how 1/3 they give. I don't know what is their equation, how they do it. So they just say, no, you propose X amount, we'll give you X divided by three. And they just take it or leave it. So just one find it is a send you. The ministry also does like this, But then we said, okay, we'll just take it. You give, we'll try to manage. And we manage it with then try to get matching funds. So all that, impacts your timeline and things like that. But we somehow managed it. I mean, so far in getting outputs, I think I'm very satisfied. because with whatever money I've got, I did what I wanted, like even radio tagging I did. That helped me a lot. Yes. I think our own conviction in what we wanted to do helped, yes.
So Prachi, I have just maybe a two or three more questions that are more broadly reflective. Based on your experiences in the Forest Owlet work, but also more broadly with other research that you've done as part of your through your NGO, what has that taught you about the place, the relevance of science and scientists in conservation decision making? What do you think have been the main learnings from your experiences over all these years?
About role of science and scientists, right, in conservation decision. I mean, this is generally, right, not related to forest art, right?
Not necessarily, but based on your own experiences in.
Experience here. So I think any action backed by science is has far more
Hello,
Hi.
Prachi.
Yeah, are you
Yeah,
there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, sorry, actually the power went off.
I guess the power must have gone, so I stayed on the call.
Yeah. So we tried connecting through hotspot, but now it's come. It's come. Yeah.
You started talking about you started I asked you based on your own experiences over all these years, what are your learnings about the place of science and scientists in conservation in India?
Yes. So I think science is very important, Hari, because nowadays, these days, lots of WhatsApp science is being circulated, and it's more important now than earlier, because people have come up with their own theories about everything, possible. So in that, I think our own science stands tall, and we have to back it up, whatever we say, with science. And that is, so for one instance, people would say, okay, I'll talk about the owl only, when I started with color banding, I told you I met with opposition from certain particular individuals saying, no, the owls can be identified by their facial pattern or, body. This forest owlet or any other owls do not, I mean, especially forest owlet does not have that kind of a pattern. So they put a theory, like male is like this, female is like this. I did the color banding. I got the morphometry individual parameters, and I showed that there is no reverse sexual dimorphism in forest owlet, which means the female is larger than the male. So you can't really see just by observing that this is a female, and one needs to have some permanent ID for the owl if you're doing that kind of work, Or they just say, the pattern on the breasts, that shows, which is a male or a female. And nonsense. It does not have any such patterns on the breast or any other ones. So what I'm saying is that at every step nowadays, people have access to social media or Google, and they just write up things and influence the conservation, scene that no, this is not required, this is not required. I'm not saying all science or all kind of invasive techniques are required, but what is required, if it is done well, and I'm sure it gives you better results on practicing good, better conservation. Like identifying your priority and where these areas or where it has to be implemented. So I think that good science, I mean, there's nothing which is a surrogate for good science. Nothing. It has to be a not compromised science, rigorous science. We have to practice it. This is the time, more now than ever, because habitat is growing, loss of habitat. We have to use cutting edge technology. I believe in that. Yes. So, breeding success. I mean, now GIB, if you see, now they have been able to breed, some, because that is really gone. That bird has gone extinct. Almost in Maharashtra, I'm saying, in the areas where I have seen it. We have seen it in 2009, that those birds have gone. So what I am trying to say is that, yes, we need to use good science, and you should not shy away from using technology. So scientists are definitely should guide conservation. So, and then that conservation should also take. So I think they are both part of the, other side of the coin. I mean, they just go hand in glove, science and conservation. They feed each other, I think.
So if a student who's about to finish school came and told you that they're really passionate about conservation and they want to do something to, protect the environment, protect wildlife, and asked you for career advice, what might you say?
Nice. Well, I would definitely tell them to get themselves trained first in one of the science streams, so they understand the principles. So it can be any just graduation in biology, zoology, or whatever, botany, whatever, just science. Because that gives you work, graduating in science actually technically trains you, if you're in a good college, to think, to experiment, to ask questions, which is very important, right? And to protect, I would say you don't need to wait. I mean, you can just start engaging with people who are already working, because at this stage you may not be having the resources at the time to do research on your own. But at least assist somebody who's doing the research, understand how it has been done, and pursue your career. I mean, academics at the same time. And when the time comes, either you join that, I mean, you go in that direction of pursuing your academics in that direction, if you don't want to for certain reasons. And if you've understood the principles of the science or the research of the conservation behind it, then keep it close to your heart and implement it or help somebody implement it. Like become a volunteer in projects which are going there or help the forest department. There are many ways youngsters can associate themselves. One way is, of course, academic. You become a scientist. Other way is associate with ongoing projects or research. Get that experience and help in, you know, executing the work. Because we are always short of manpower, good manpower, I would say, you know, committed people. So even the forest department or the NGOs. So we also get a lot of interns, you know, who come, who work with us on various projects. And later on, many of them have taken up as this as a career, you know, in their life. So I'm not saying that, yeah, this is the best career choice, because, see, a lot of things are happening already. The right choice for me. I couldn't have been anywhere else. So I thought if it made sense to what did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. Yes.
Okay. So I think, Thari, I just would like to say, you know, conservation or say love for wildlife or nature, I would say, or for environment, the discipline is very, it's a value system, you know. Okay, we've all got educated in that stream, particular stream, you know, how to get take it further. So that's why we are now like, so I am pursuing that stream, but I'm very happy that I have that close to my heart, and that reflects in my way of living, you know. So we are a small NGO. We may not be as big as many other organizations, because we are not really aiming to have big funds. We want to know what we want to do. So that there is a deep sense of satisfaction there.
So Prati, you know, over your career, you have been involved in so many different kinds of work. You've contributed to research and conservation in so many different ways. You've set up an NGO. So looking back, among all of these things that you have done, which you can think of as your contributions, you know, what you've found out about the forest owlet, the papers you've published, but also you've done work on other systems, you know, human elephant conflict, and you also mentioned the corridor work. Looking back at all of this, I know this is not easy, but if you had to pick one or two of them that have given you the most satisfaction in terms of how they went, and which, when you look back at your contributions, what might those be?
It's asking a mother to choose a favorite child, no?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, difficult. But I think forest solitaire, my owl project now, it's become more of an owl research because I really got very drawn into it and I enjoy going there, being there. I love being in the field. And so elephant project, yes, it's going very well. A lot of, see, there are many other aspects we are dealing with, in a farmer's perspective, politicians, there are many more stakeholders, you know. So 10 years I pulled on. Now I've sort of told Jayant that now you give your focus here. I want to focus more on my owl work. If you tell me, I think I would just say, yeah, my owl work is very close to me.
But even within that, are there particular findings, revelations, particular maybe conservation interventions? I don't know. Among all the different things that you've done within the forest audit work, is are there particular contributions that you look back and say that was really satisfying?
I find telemetry very satisfying, you know, because then I am in, now we are able to find nest sites of mottled wood owl and brown fish owl. We did not know. We need this information, you know, because we are completely lacking in this information. Eagle owl, and I think with telemetry, I have been able to sort of, track them down and get their secretive hiding places. Like, this is where all, you know, you have been hiding all these years. And it's good fun. I mean, I just look at it as a very good academic fun also, that, you know, what technology can give you, what information it can give you. And it's real information, not real time information. So it's, I find it very exciting. And I think that also contributes a lot in conservation, because now I know which areas we need to focus, you know. On like where we are going to feed, and when we find, many times we find naturally dead owls. You know, like yesterday, my assistant called me, researcher called me. He said, "We found one spotted owl dead, not our tagged one." He said, and it is like, so, you know, we, so Jayant and I both were, I said, "You know, we should take viscera and find out where, why." But the department protocols are so annoying, and now they'll again, you know, tell us it must be your owl. You know, that I told you my bad experiences. So I just take pictures, take note cam with the GPS location, date, and everything, and we'll just put it. Like, I have a report in which I put mortality of owls, you know, whatever we have found during work, natural mortalities, and we put pictures. So that is how I started telemetry. I wanted to know why owls are dying, where they're going to feed. Is there something like, you know, poisoning due to the prey? But being in Melbourne, I'm not able to do all this because they're very strict about, you know, their permits and all. It takes ages for them to understand also the need of, you know, research. So I just, I'm documenting. Maybe I will do all this when I go to Madhya Pradesh. It's much easier to work. One forest bird I found in Madhya Pradesh, in the nest it was dead. In the inside, it was not my banded bird, but it was, because we are monitoring the nest, we found that the female has gone inside but it has not come, and then some smell started coming. This was like in 2015 or something. 15. And then somehow we went, and it was a very narrow cavity. You know, we got the bird out, we called the range officer. He said, "You come, we want to show." And it was a female who just died inside, and we saw she had swallowed this plastic, you know, that paper or zarda, that pan masala thing, wrapper. Pan masala wrapper was found in her gut. So maybe it had, may have, you know, torn off some intestine. I don't know what, because by then it had decomposed also the body, but I could see the plastic in this. So, well, I, why did I mention this? Yeah, so what, the point I mentioned, this is like, you know, we told the department and they took it in the right spirit. Yes, this has happened. Or we, those two, our tagged birds, which are predated by eagle owl, I told you, in Madhya Pradesh. Yeah, I reported it to the forest department and they said yes, and we took all the panchnama. The matter ended there in Madhya, in Melgaud. It has taken a different turn, you know, because of the local atmosphere. So that's what I'm saying. I will feel more comfortable working with.
So Prachi, if I were to ask you the opposite question, among all the things that you've done, which has what have been the disappointments, looking back?
Disappointment.
Which you look back and say, I wish that that aspect of my work had gone differently, or I wish it turned out better.
Technically, I don't think I have any grievances,
Okay.
but I wish I had better team to work with, especially in my house. Yeah, that has affected the things. I wish I had, because what has happened, that has taken a toll on me. I wish, I had not taken that, we had never worked with that particular lot, because that has really impacted. Otherwise, I don't think we faced any such severe issues. Even when we didn't have funds, no, we didn't have a problem. We worked with whatever constraints, but we took out, we gave an outcome. So, because we were very focused on our work. Money and permissions we generally got little bit late or delayed or whatever. So I told you, no, I put 46 birds to tag. So Forest Department, because of the ample trust in us, we got funds also. We generated funds for some 16, 18 tags, which is not an easy thing, about 25 lakh rupees within a year or so. So those were not the was this my disappointment was that, when you try doing good things and then people who don't do, and when you get wrong people, yeah, this is what I want to say. When you get the wrong people, wrong team to work with, that is when my That is what I mean. Otherwise, I am quite happy with the way our work is going.
So Prachi, that I think brings us to the end of this interview. I wanted to ask you whether there's anything else that you would like to add that you think is relevant to this conversation and to the theme of this project that might not have been covered by the questions.
You are very brave. You still think that you'd ask me to talk more. I think so much everybody laughs at me, like the end is there. We're like, how much do you talk? No, I don't think. I think I've just told you about everything.
Okay.
Whatever came to my mind, yeah. In fact, but
Okay.
you should ask me if you know anything. If you want anything particular, if I've not been able to answer, then you can maybe probably write to me a
Yeah.
particular time, and I'll answer that
No.
specifically.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything specifically that, I mean, the things that I wanted specifically, I've asked you. Otherwise, I wanted this to be an open conversation, to go in directions that were interesting that but might have been things that I didn't anticipate at the beginning before I started the conversation. So in that sense, it's been really interesting talking to you. So I want to end by asking you something a little different. Again, looking back, if you had to pick a wildlife moment in your own life that you particularly cherish, what would it be? This is also like asking you to pick your favorite child, I know, but what comes to mind immediately when I ask you this question? Is there a particular wildlife moment that comes to mind?
Definitely, I've written an article on this.
Aha.
It happened one night, So in Melghat, I was there. This is when doing my PhD, right?
Okay.
So it was, I had a gypsy, WI had given me a gypsy. So that was a Holika time, Holi festival. It's very big in Maharashtra. So my assistant, field assistant, Urdu fellow, and my driver who was there, they wanted to go home. They said, okay, you go and all that. And I was very happy about it too. Go out on my own alone. And I told this Mr. Khosri, the field director, he had put an entire this thing, retinue of his guards. This girl is like, she's very, she just goes out, it's very dangerous, so you have to keep an eye on her. So he had given instructions that way. So my movements are all being tracked, and it was just to go to him by wireless, that, madam, yahan gaya, gypsy yahan gaya, aisa aisa karke. Anyway, so that day when they went, I just quietly took my gypsy, and I went this place, tourism zone. It's like now in the core area, but those days it was not. Okay, only my gypsy, they used to be allowed everywhere because they knew I was working, and all the people knew me, the staff. Because it was Holi, there's a big shikar which goes on that day. There's a tradition in the culture, and Rathiyas, there's another community. Tribals are very aggressive, so they also come down to hunt sambar. that day. So these people now who are on the gate, they have this barricade, like a bamboo pole ka barricade, no? So they just leave that because they are very scared. And they also, of course, go for Holi, that's the big festival. So none of the barriers are manned on the day of the Holi. So main to wahan se nikal gayi dopahar mein. I just took my gypsy and I went. I didn't tell anybody. And I just went, opened the barrier and I went inside and I locked it again. I knew where the things were kept under the stone. So I went in. And then I enjoyed, you know, the Holi is a full moon, no? So I wanted to spend the entire night in the sitting in the vehicle. Huh? So I had my camera, everything, and I had packed some food. I said, I'll stay. And I was enjoying myself so much, you know. I could see a bear like coming up, a herd of gone. Slowly the moon emerged. It was like 7:30-ish in the by evening, you know. Suddenly I saw vehicle lights. Okay. And I realized the vehicle had entered this area from far. I said, oh, why? I thought these must be the rats, you know, the tribals. Who have come to hunt the Samba because they are very famous. And I said, and I had all these big camera from the institute. I said, I'm hiding it. I said, whatever happened to me, we did not take the camera. I was scared, you know. I hid it in the seats and all. And I saw the vehicle light was approaching. And then I said, no, maybe I should take the vehicle out and go. Little, you know, hide. Because it was like a, you know, a maze, that tourism road. No? It was like a route. Like, you know, how you know this zigzag route. And the opposite side, there was another gate from which I could go out. Okay. There was a circuit of some 12, 13 kilometers. So I knew. I said, maybe I'll just go and, you know, hide or just go out after this. I'm stupid now. What if they kill me and all? Suddenly, dog. So I started and I realized I had a flat tire. I said, now what to do? I said, now whatever it is, I'll just tell them, please don't do anything to my camera. I have to return it to the institute. Mentally, I was preparing, you know, how I'll talk to those poachers and all, you know. And then suddenly I saw the vehicle was going back. So, okay, whatever it is, you know, the whole night I just sat on my steering wheel with nothing, you know. It was like very tension filled and I was wondering, what should I do? Morning, I just drove with that flat tire on the other side and started trying to change the tire. When truck wala stopped, he said, "Nahi, main karke deta hu." He just fitted the stepney. Quietly, I just drove back to my base camp and I just sat there without telling anybody anything. I was like, hey. I said, no, I'm not going to say no. And then after some time, when forest guard came, where were you, Mr. Where were you? I said, no, no, I was just like this. No, no, tell, where were you? So I told him, I said, look, I have gone. I said, he said, you know, the DA4 had come yesterday. And because it's a Holi, no? We in Maharashtra, we have Puran Podi. It's a sweet food. So since he knew you were alone, he had got those Puran Podis for you. He said he came looking for you. Somebody said, Gypsy yahan pe gaya hai, madam, come with that. We saw her going. So he came to look for you. For some distance he came, he couldn't find you. So he went back. So, that really is my favorite incident. Of course, I am really that stupid thing that I have done. But this, I had narrated it to the person, one of the newsletters, you know. It happened one night. It was very nice for me because, you know, I was all by myself seeing the wildlife. You know. It really excited me.
Yeah. That's always special.
Sorry,
go on, Prachi.
You should not start me laughing on this. Because I will not end like Jayant laughing, you know, like I think Miss Cogger Bola, but she won't. I think
we don't
start
me off. No, but
many mad things, you know, Hari and. Now, when Antara does something like this, no, I tell her, like, no, you should be careful. And she looks at me and says, look who's talking. All your stories from you, your colleague, how mad you were. Now you are telling me. I said, my time was different. That's the nothing to it. You know why I'm like this.
Yeah.
You were saying something.
No, I was only saying that I I relate to what you're saying because, the few times that I've also been in the forest entirely on my own have been very, very special. It's really a completely different experience to be
I
out
should sometimes
on
hear your experience. You know, you
your
made me say so many things. Maybe you
own.
should tell me sometime whenever
No,
you are
it's
coming.
nowhere as exciting as the life
Oh,
you've led.
sure, it must be.
Yeah.
Anyway, sometime.
Okay, thank you so much, Prachi. The conversations over the last, I think it's been over the last 5 weeks have been really, really interesting. It's, I know I before we started talking, I knew a little bit about your work. I, listened to you talk maybe on a couple of occasions, but this has given me a completely different understanding of your work and where your interests come from and why you choose to do what you do. And I'm really grateful that, you were willing to invest so much time in these conversations. It's been really nice. Thank you so much.
Wanted to say the same thing to you because it applies to you. I'm very grateful to you for making me talk and actually giving this opportunity for me to really speak. You know, the way you ask questions, I mean, you really allowed me to flow, and you've given so much time, Harry. Five, six, more than an hour. I can see it's gone to two, almost 2 hours. And this is how I am. I lose track of time when I'm talking about something that is close to my mind. So you actually bore with me, you know, I mean.
No, for me it was all interesting. It's not it, yeah, and I think that the these conversations are interesting, much more interesting, and I've learned this over time that they're much more interesting when they are open like this and go off in different directions. There are certain themes that I'm interested in, but also there were so many new things that came up during the conversation which
Hello?
were really
Hello?
interesting. Yeah, hello, can you hear me?
No, I lost you. I'm certain things you are interested in the
No, I
conversation.
said that, when I started the conversation, there were certain things that I was interested in, certain themes that I was interested in that I based on which I asked you questions, but it was also really nice that it went off in unanticipated directions. I think that really made for a rich conversation.
Your credit goes to you for being a very good listener.
Yeah,
Thanks a lot, Harry.
Prachi.
I enjoyed all those sessions.
I'll
Yeah,
just
I just enjoyed talking. Sorry, you were saying?
no no I was just saying that there is I wanted to say something about the paperwork related to this interview, but maybe I'll just stop the recording and we can continue to chat for a few minutes. Yeah.